Off the Ball Breakfast.
Well, you say doing double training sessions. I'd say he's being forced to do double training sessions, and he's there as a shell of a person.
Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill, you can boost your winnings on the Sunday game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.
All right, we're looking ahead to the weekend's football action in the FA Cup and in the Women's League Cup. It is Arsenal against the London City Lionesses. And that I get mixed up it's because FA they were Cup. Playing. It is the FA Cup, sorry. They lost the League Cup to Manchester City. My apologies to Arsenal. We're all going for like massive, massive wins for Arsenal in that fixture as a spoiler, which could be a decisive factor in where this league table goes over the course of this weekend. Feels that everybody just plays it safe at this point for all these predictable sort of Premier League fixtures. But a cup weekend does tend to change that. Let's have a look at how the standings look after last weekend. So a little bit of movement, I believe. Will, still on top, 5 points clear of Mick Cullum at the bottom on 39 points. Kathleen, it's been a while since you've been in here. How are you happy? How are you happy with your season and how it's going at the moment? 46 points, I think, is what it says there.
Not particularly. I was doing a lot better apart from last weekend, and then I kind of phoned a few of them in a little bit. I yarrowed away the Arsenal win, which is totally fine because I enjoyed the game in the moment,
yes.
But didn't get any points out of it.
They wouldn't have won without that.
Exactly. It was all me, Owen. Yeah. It was all
Arsenal,
me.
No, I went for a draw.
Did you? Right, okay.
So, yeah, that was disappointing. You kind of come away with some sort of who you got remorse.
Yeah.
If you don't back Arsenal, for example, to win a game and then they go on and win the game, you're like, you should have had more faith.
But maybe
as they proved midweek,
yeah,
having faith in Arsenal is not a fruitful pursuit.
There's a lot of draws. I feel like I sometimes, and it is sitting on the fence, you go for a draw in those big games. Like, you know, if it's Arsenal City or it's Liverpool City, I look back at my scores, I'm like, Jesus, I just kept going for draws in those big games. And a lot of people do the same. I think there's that fear of calling the big games particularly.
I think the old 2-1, that's the one that gets everyone.
Yeah.
So it's such an easy result to just throw in there and be like, oh yeah, that'll be it.
That'll
nice
do.
Little 2-1.
Yeah.
And how often do those actually happen?
I know, it's a fair point.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, I think you should be playing this game, boringly, although I've got no idea how Will has been playing it, but he seems to know more than we do about what's going to happen in the future. Let's have a look at our first fixture this weekend, which I believe is going to be Aston Villa versus Tottenham. All eyes on one man this weekend. Two of our team are going for Villa to win. Sorry, two penalty shootouts here. Jer's going for a Villa win on penalties. Nathan's going for a Spurs win on penalties. They're both going for a 1-1 draw after extra time. I thought Mick had something that resembles an after extra time win for Aston Villa, but he's going for 3-2 Villa. And really everybody other than yourself, Shane, is going for an Aston Villa win. So you're backing Spurs.
Which is a very difficult thing to do.
Spending too much time with JD.
I know, possibly. Saturdays and Sundays are killing me, you see. Just the Spursiness seeps into my veins being around John. Which isn't great, you know, for my general.
The most
demeanor.
Cutting thing you could ever say about a human being.
Yeah, yeah. But apart from that, John's great. So to open up the Jer Gilroy line, open up the kimono.
That gets coined way too much.
It does.
I really hate that.
I don't
line
even know what a kimono. What is a kimono? This prediction of Spurs to win was made before last night. And Spurs' abject performance last night. So yesterday afternoon I said, you know, I think Spurs, you know, in the Cups they're going well. They've got a semi-final second leg tonight, which was last night against Liverpool, and the FA Cup the weekend. And I just was quite optimistic about Spurs. If I could change, and I don't think we can change, I probably would be changing. to be honest with you.
It's a great start.
Yeah. I'm not behind it whatsoever. Like, Spurs to win 2-1 away at Aston Villa, it sounded like a great thing at the time. It looks terrible now in hindsight. The only other thing you would say is Ange Postecoglou, of course, at the start of the season said, I always win a trophy in my second year. This is his second year, and by all accounts, the FA Cup now is the last trophy standing for his Spurs team. So he's got to push on and do it. It's a very, very difficult fourth round tie to play Aston Villa away. There's always something just about playing Aston Villa in the early rounds of the FA Cup, the third, fourth, fifth round, especially away from home, that feels especially difficult. Villa Park is there's a real cup stadium atmosphere to Villa Park for some reason. And then like Spurs obviously had the injuries as well. Richarlison gone, Matthijs Tel forced into probably an earlier debut than maybe Ange Postecoglou had hoped. But Villa haven't got past the fourth round since 2015. of the FA Cup. They just don't have deep FA Cup runs in them in recent years, in the last 10 years. So for that reason, I'll be attentively, I'm going to go and stick with my Tottenham 2-1 away win.
Yeah. That was a journey you took us on there.
I was trying to get to the destination eventually myself. I didn't know where I was going with it, Kathleen. We got there.
We've all actually gone kind of conservative, bar like Cullum and Will in this game, considering how leaky both defences are.
Mm. Yeah, it could be a 4-3.
True, and I think that's actually what's going to be relevant to our charity bet in a moment. I think eventually yesterday, because like, enough of this. We know it's going to be a high-scoring game. Both teams are probably going to score, and that's how Aston Villa versus Tottenham tends to go. We should say that Tottenham can still win the Europa League, and this is not necessarily the last bastion for them to actually go and win a trophy. But I do appreciate how you've taken Ange at face value and said, he says, I always win a trophy in second season, therefore...
It's going to happen.
But you wouldn't be particularly surprised if they were to pull a performance out of nowhere. It's impossible to talk about this game and look ahead to it without talking about Marcus Rashford. What's your general sense of optimism for Rashford that he can have a good 5 months here?
I mean, it's been such a weird couple of months for him that I think it's going to go one of two ways. It also depends on how much playing time he gets over the next while. You know, I don't see him being thrown straight in there. It's all going to depend on what they see from him in the training field. Obviously, before he went, Amorim was making lots of noise and linking, well, not necessarily saying his name, but kind of linking him to bad attitude on the training pitch and different things like that. Now, you would think that a lot of other stuff coming out of the camp is that he didn't actually have that bad attitude, so was it just a case of personality clash? But I'm hoping for his sake that it is a fresh start, that he gets back to scoring ways. It would be quite funny if he did start scoring a load of goals and all of a sudden Manchester United were sitting there scratching their head being like, oh, we actually did have a talented young English player at our midst.
Do a Scott McTominay on it.
Basically. Mm.
Amorim has obviously been speaking about this week, but there's embargo quotes that came out this morning, which sheds a bit more light on it. I couldn't get Marcus to see the way you're supposed to play football and to train the way I see it. Sometimes you have one player who's really good with one coach and the same player with another coach is different. I just wish the best to Rashford and Unai Emery and hope they connect because he's a very good player. It's a bit of the old criticism sandwich there. Mm. Well, actually, no, it's just criticism and then a bit of positivity at the end. I couldn't get him to play football the way you're supposed to play and train the way I see it. It still is. Like, even though he's technically not his problem for the next few months, you're still sticking the boot in there, which is the main reason why I think a lot of people will have reservations about what Marcus Rashford will do this season. You can't put the genie back in the bottle with regards to commitment and motivation. The question then is the base level talent. And for me, the biggest level of hope that I'd have for Marcus Rashford is the fact that Unai Emery and Aston Villa are a smart club. Mm. They've done smart things over the last number of years and nobody was forcing them to take on what some people would see as a burden. Mm. So that's why I've got this unreasonable level of hope that Marcus Rashford can actually do something quite good at the end of the season. But as you say, Kathleen, like if you're just looking at him purely as a footballer and in his current guise and forgetting like his high points for Manchester United, forgetting his level of profile, if he's just another footballer, he probably just bolsters their attacking options. Mm. Probably doesn't start. Like, if Nick was here, he'd probably say that Ramsey should always be starting for Aston Villa. He rates him very highly. You've obviously got Rodgers in there and Watkins in there. And where does Marcus Rashford play then? Because you're not going to play him in the central position behind the striker. You're not going to play him in the striker position. And you're not going to play him at the left, which is where Ramsey plays. So there are Rashford's positions all sewn up. So maybe he's just somebody who bolsters those spot positions.
But then again, in a cup match as well, is it also the sort of place where you do see him get the opportunity to come straight into the squad? I mean,
That's what I said. I said the charity bet I was trying to push for a Rashford anytime goal, and partly because I thought, well, maybe he could come off the bench and score, but also partly because United fans have a bit of scar tissue from players who leave the club and were brutal at the club and end up being really good when they leave. Like Gerard Piqué comes to mind, Memphis Depay comes to mind as players who just left and went on to better. Even Lukaku, like, woeful at Old Trafford and then went on to fairly decent things thereafter, started scoring goals again. So there is the fear from Manchester United fans that Rashford will immediately start scoring for Villa. Some of those comments from Amorim, even where he says just some managers and players don't see eye to eye and maybe himself and Unai Emery can see it. Like, There's a lot of reading between the lines of what Amorim has said there. We don't know exactly what's happened in training.
There's an arrogance to what he's saying. Like, I couldn't get him to play football the way you're supposed to play football. I couldn't get him to play what I wanted, my style, my thinking around things, and then to try and temper it with, you know, some players and coaches just don't get along. You know, maybe what Amorim's style was just wasn't Rashford's style. Now, you could probably say that Rashford's problem started long before Amorim came in anyways, but I do feel like Emery, if someone was to mould Rashford into, I don't know, a version of what we expected him to turn into, or to bring him back into some sort of level of competing regularly, I do think Emery is probably quite well placed to do that if he feels like their footballing styles will match.
It's a very good point, and also the constant theme around Amorim is how can you expect a manager to come in and stamp his style on a squad that has never played this style before? And you could make a very strong case, doesn't have the players to work in Amorim's style of football. And if you do rewind the clock, probably to multiple points over the last 2 or 3 years, I'm sure there's been links with Unai Emery to Manchester United. That maybe if Unai Emery and Marcus Rashford strike up a brilliant partnership manager-player over the next few months, will United fans be thinking to themselves, geez, in, what was it, 2022, when the opportunity was potentially there for this marriage to happen? That could have been the thing that took this Manchester United squad onto the next level. That would be an overreaction to one player and his response to a manager. But
possibly just Efsen Butt in his time at Old Trafford was just coming to a natural conclusion anyway. But I can't really see Rashford playing for United again. Like, even if this loan goes really well, you'd imagine then Villa would be keen to sign him up permanently. His wages are astronomical. You see players like Jadon Sancho, for example. He was never going to come back to Old Trafford under Erik ten Hag. That relationship had become untenable. It feels like with a lot of the comments here from Amorim, that relationship between him and Rashford has become untenable as well. Unless Rashford has a real change of attitude, a shift in his demeanour in training, and also the fact that, you know, you get away with flying to Belfast, you know, the night or two before a game and having a night out back in the 60s, 70s, before smartphones came in. Marcus Rashford's not stupid. He knew that, you know, he was going to be seen doing this. So there's little moments like that that, you know, Amorim just wants to root out those kinds of players from the club. Anthony's obviously gone now as well to Real Betis. And that's another one of those curses. Anthony got player of the match in his first game for Real Betis on this loan. So it's just a classic example of what happens. But I think it's a good move for Marcus. I think it's a good move for Villa potentially. And it's an excellent move for Manchester United, because it's all that wage money, most of it, off the books, and a player that didn't want to be there essentially gone.
Yeah, right. So that is Aston Villa, and we'll be keeping an eye on them over the course of this weekend. They're up against Tottenham Hotspur in the FA Cup. Let's bring in Lee Phelps from William Hill to have a look at the weekend's fixtures. Lee, how are you getting on?
Yeah, I'm really good, thank you. Really enjoyed that conversation. Covered off. I mean, I just think Ange must be absolutely delighted with this Rashford storyline, because it takes the heat off it for a little while. Everyone talking about it. Yeah, fascinating game, especially after last night. I was kind of watching the game last night, waiting to kind of write the previews and film some videos. And, you know, at one point you thought, okay, Tottenham are doing okay here. And then by the end of it, you just think, wow. And Ange Postecoglou went odds on to be the next Premier League manager to lose his job after that. As you guys said, if you listen to the experts, you think that Ange has got kind of his job's hanging by three cup threads. One went last night, another one could go on Sunday, then you've just got the Europa League. Whether he keeps his job or not, if he loses in all these, but fascinating game. It's a great weekend, actually. I mean, obviously, FA Cup's always great. I was looking at an Acker on Saturday. It's another one of William Hill's freemium weekends. So every Friday, Saturday, Sunday through February, if you log on and opt in, you get either free bets or free spins. So for Saturday, there's Acker's available. And that FA Cup list, there's some really interesting games in there. I mean, Leeds are a short price to win at home. Man City's short price to win at Leyton Orient. I don't know. I'm not 100% confident in that. There's a few other decent matches, and there's one kind of slight outsider that I quite like. Whether you'd call it an outsider, I'm not sure. It's Burnley at Southampton. Now, there are two places between them in the league ladder, if you like, but a lot more in terms of confidence between the two. Burnley have conceded one goal in the last 10 games.
Insane.
Unbelievably. It's crazy. Like, loads of nil-nils in there. So they do have to score at Southampton. But they're 7-2 to win at Southampton, which I just don't, I don't think that's the right price. So whether you stick that in an Acker or back it as a bit of an outsider for an FA Cup bet, I like them.
Yeah, did you see James Trafford for Burnley and his interactions with JJ Watt, saying, and JJ Watt was like, I'll get back into my NFL uniform if you continue to keep clean sheets for the rest of the season. And the guy's gone on like an unbelievable run of keeping clean sheets for Burnley. So yeah, definitely one to watch. We were considering, Lee, I know we've been pretty close with some of our charity bets over the last couple of weeks. We were thinking over 3.5 goals in the Aston Villa Tottenham game.
Yeah, it makes sense, doesn't it? It's 23-20, so it's just a touch of odds against. I'm thinking the same. I mean, you know, weirdly, if you look at the head-to-heads, Tottenham have scored 4 against Villa in the last 2 games against them, you know, which seems unlike Spurs at the moment, who are conceding 4. But I think what you guys said, you know, they're handy going forward, both of them, aren't they? But they're leaky at the back, which is a perfect combination for an over 3.5 goals bet. I don't mind it at all. I've done a bet builder, and I haven't put over 3.5 in, but, you know, you could easily add it in. I went over 2.5 just on the same idea that I think there will be goals in the game. I went with Ollie Watkins to score. Obviously, he's having a good season anyway. And, you know, look at the forwards that, you know, they've brought in during the window. He'll be motivated to keep on his mettle, won't he? I know they've lost, you know, their main impact sub, John Duran, but, you know, there's plenty on the bench. And whether Rashford starts or not, or comes off the bench, if Watkins does get subbed and you've got plenty of firepower coming on. So that's 2 of them. I like Heung-min Son to have at least 1 shot on target. I saw him live against Rangers and I thought he was pretty abject, to be honest with you. And I've been kind of following ever since. And he's only just started to get back into form. But I think for him to have at least 1 shot on target is a decent enough bet. And Lucas Bergvall to be carded. The young Swede is pretty hot-headed. He's had at least 1 foul in each of his last 7 games. And he's been carded a few times this season, already 5 times already this season. He's... Spurs fans love him because he gets stuck in and he's, you know, wears his heart on his sleeve, if you like, but that comes with yellows as well. So I like all 4 of those together. It comes to around 16-1 before your boosts on top of that. Incidentally, on the Rashford thing, he's 9-5 to score at any time. He's 6-1 to score first. He's 11-1 to score 2 or more, and he's 50-1 to score a debut hat trick.
On last week, Lee, I think we kind of powered on with our own charity bet, but did we ignore good advice from you? Because like when I was watching the Arsenal City game, I think in the first second of the game, Kai Havertz gets a shot on target, and I know you'd mentioned that last week. So I don't know. Maybe we're better off just listening to you and then making our charity bet.
The bet builder didn't land, so yeah, okay. That was one part of it that landed. But I mean, the thing is with these bet builders is like I always put a suggestion up each week, and they're pretty hard to land, to be honest with you. So I think it's a case of like having a look at them and, you know, listening to my bet builder. You could quite easily put over 3.5 in, and it'll bump it up quite a bit more. Cards are always the way in with these bet builders. You know, if you can pick out a couple of cards, it really, you know, it really increases the price on the bet builder. And it's a good way of giving you that, you know, that kind of enjoyment throughout the game in terms of, you know, sometimes, like, I haven't even gone for a result in that, obviously, Spurs-Villa game. I think Villa probably should win, you know, and they are the favourites to win, but it means you can just go for a lot of different angles. So, yeah, it gave us hope, but in the end, it didn't land, unfortunately.
All right. Anything else that's catching your eye this weekend, Lee?
No, well, we've got the Super Bowl, of course, coming up on Sunday, so that's huge for us. You know, it's one of the biggest sporting events, obviously, globally, but for us, it's like right up there with some of the kind of biggest boxing events and all that. So we've got bet builders, we've got some great props available. You know, the props are a big thing, obviously, the Super Bowl. We're kind of betting on the halftime show and all the rest of it. And there's some really good puns on there. The traders, I think it's their favourite time of the year because they get to make puns out of bets. So it's there's one, for instance, which is called Mahomes Under the Hammer, which anyone likes, so that sort of thing. So yeah, check out all the markets on that. You can do bet builders on the Super Bowl as well, but yeah, plenty to look out for.
All right, Lee, great stuff. Thanks so many for being with us.
Thanks, guys.
Cheers. And Who You Got is in association with William Hill. Remember, you must be over 18 and visit gamblingcare.ie for more information. Let's move on to our next game as we continue our build up to the FA Cup weekend. I think it's the Brighton game next. Yep, indeed. So everybody's going for a Chelsea win here at the Amex, except for Mick, who is going for Chelsea after extra time. Sorry, this is where I'm getting mixed up. This is the game that Mick was going for after an extra time win. So a draw on the game, a 1-1 scoreline is what he reckons, but Chelsea are going to find the crucial goal in extra time. Everyone here backing Chelsea, I presume this is all on the back of Brighton taking an absolute battering against Nottingham Forest last week.
Yeah, and all 3 of us going for a 3-1 away win as well, which is mysterious and kind of creepy. I don't know who put in the decisions first there. Might be copying each other to an extent. That 7-goal hammering by Forest was the worrying one for Hertzler. And it was also his reaction at full time as well, where he kind of only He went over to the away fans and was very half-hearted in his kind of applause, and it just looked like a man who's downbeat at the recent form, because you look at the start of Brighton's season and you know they're getting big wins, and they beat City and beat United, and you know they were just beating teams that you wouldn't fancy them necessarily against. Maybe you'd fancy them against United, in fairness. But there's just something going wrong, and the wheels are starting to not quite come off. They're still 10th in the Premier League table, and they can still push on and have a nice run of games and still push on for European football. But certainly, of late, you'd have to say that there are issues with that Brighton team. Obviously, Evan Ferguson won't be involved now. It'll be interesting to see how he fares at West Ham. But he was right to move. He wasn't getting the proper game time at Brighton. And it just feels like, even though this game is at the Amex, Chelsea will fancy it. And if you look at the record in fourth round ties in the FA Cup, in the past 28 seasons, 26 times have got through to the fifth round. So they know how to get over this game. They're 8-time champions of the FA Cup as well. So going to be a tough afternoon, I think, for Brighton.
Did feel relatively kamikaze, the Brighton approach, that Nottingham Forest game last week. One holding midfielder in Hinchelwood, I think, Beliba is going to be back this weekend, or at least it wasn't a severe injury that kept him out, and he's been one of their shining lights this season. In any normal scenario, Brighton playing Chelsea could be an audition for the Brighton manager to become the next Chelsea manager, but Fabian Hertzler not doing it for the young people right now. He's had a tricky couple of months. Ever since the end of November, really, it's felt like Brighton have fallen off a small bit. What about Chelsea, Kathleen, in terms of like where they're going at the moment? Because it feels like we've just put their title challenge on ice after we've realised that the evidence is that they probably aren't ready to challenge on that level.
Yeah, I think Chelsea's season has been kind of interesting in that obviously they're in the position that they are at the moment. It's been relatively good compared to previous seasons. We all laughed at them in recent years with the players that they brought in and the amount of players and what was going on behind the scenes, and it all seemed like a bit of a mess. But they've kind of quietly started to come together this season a bit more. I think for this game in particular, it's going to be interesting to see what team goes out, because there was a few changes for the West Ham game during the week, and we saw some of the younger players coming into the side, and they were all very composed, you would say. And there was a lot of praise for them from Chelsea fans, and there's been kind of a bit of rumblings around this game at the weekend that will those players be more dominant in featuring to kind of give the main starting lineup a bit of a break to continue that run in the Premier League, make sure that they secure that Champions League spot for next season. So I think that could maybe be potentially some way that if they do go with that, that Brighton might see a little bit of a bright light there and say, well, maybe there are some areas that we can target on the pitch. But I think this Chelsea team is just purring at the moment. Although you say that, and they could also very easily go and get a very random result that doesn't actually go in line with what they have done over the last while. So it's going to be an interesting one. But I do think the lineup is going to be the thing that kind of affects the game the most.
Yeah, Chelsea's fixtures after that. They have to play Brighton again next Friday night, and then they have to go to Aston Villa, so they've got two tricky fixtures in the Premier League coming up right after that, so we'll see.
They're always awkward ones, aren't they, when you play a team in the Cup and then you play them straight away again in the league. Like, it's hard to know. It's not about playing your hand, because these teams and coaching staff know the other teams very, very well, and they have their stats and numbers to back it all up, but still the familiarity between players playing, you know, twice in the space of a week or a number of days, it's tough. And the other thing is, it's very tough to win both games. It's tough to beat the same team twice in a row within a matter of days. So although I'm going for Chelsea to win this one, the league game, all of a sudden, you know, Hertzler could find something in that game. So I can't see the same team winning both of these games, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. I know it's not a Premier League weekend. Chelsea 4 points behind Forest in the Premier League, so trying to keep the pace up on them is going to be key, because you have right behind them Manchester City on 41 points and Newcastle on 41 points. So that battle for 4th/5th in the final Champions League spot could go down to the wire really this season. So Chelsea may well have their eyes on other prizes. Brighton, they're not going to be in a relegation battle come the end of the season. They're in 10th, they're literally mid-table at the moment. So maybe that's why you could reach for some hope for Brighton this weekend. Right, Everton versus Bournemouth is the last of the FA Cup games in the men's side of things that we want to chat about. Bournemouth is being predicted by myself and Colm, and by Phil and yourself, Shane. You're backing Moisey, Kathleen.
I'm backing Moisey. Yeah, I mean, it's always a difficult one fully putting your trust in Everton, but they've had a very decent run of form the last while. I had a very funny conversation with my dad, who is an Everton supporter, and I was like, when was the last time Everton beat anyone by 4 goals?
What was the answer to that question, I wonder?
I can tell you, because he told me. So it was the 2nd of September 1908 against Woolwich Arsenal.
What?
Of course. The last time they won again.
I put my hands up. I don't know how deeply my father researched this, but the fact that that was the only one he could find a 4-goal win, and yes. I found it very funny.
It might be due to the fact that his daughter is an Arsenal fan, and
that could have potentially helped.
Let me find the most important 4-0 win.
But League Division 1, 4-0. You have to say that Moyes has come in. He's definitely got that new manager bounce for Everton. They have discovered that they can actually score goals, which for a long time was just not the case at all. I think this was one of the games where I was like, to be honest, it could very easily go either way. Mm. It's on the day.
Tough game to call, isn't
it? Like, I feel it's not going to be one that's won by any sort of extreme skill or overpowering from the other side. I think it's going to be who takes their chances the best when they come around, and that's going to be a deciding factor.
I went for 3-2 and away win for Bournemouth, namely because the game...
It's a lot of goals for Everton and Bournemouth.
I know it is. But there was the game back in August where it was 3-2 to Bournemouth, and all of Bournemouth's goals came after the 87th minute. Just a crazy, crazy game.
This fixture has PTSD for Everton fans.
That's the thing.
Mm. Like,
they thought they had
horrendous.
That game won. Was it 2-0 in the 87th minute?
Seamus Coleman, I remember, should have put them 3-0 up. He had this amazing opportunity, blazed over the crossbar, and they should have been 3-0 up earlier in that game, and they just completely capitulated.
Yeah.
They never really recovered from that under Dyche.
No, that's going to be in the back of heads, surely, for this fixture. Moyes obviously lost his first game in charge. He's won 3 since on the spin. I just feel like maybe that winning run has come to an end. Bournemouth are such a solid, compact team. Iriola has done brilliant things. The only thing you would say about Iriola, they're going so well in a league sense, generally, that maybe they take their eye off the FA Cup a little bit. They'll know that, obviously, if Everton score an early goal at Goodison Park, tails up, and it'll be tough for his Bournemouth team to win, and he won't be that upset if they get knocked out of the FA Cup, maybe, and can focus solely on getting European football in the Premier League. But I just think Bournemouth have maybe a little bit too much, and have gone for 5-goal thriller and a bit of carnage in this game. I'm probably thinking back to that game in August, and I've cursed it now, and it'll be 0-0, and someone will squeeze over the line on penalties. But I just somehow think Bournemouth. But you look at that, you rarely see a prediction on who you got week to week where it's so split. I think is there 9 of us involved, and it's maybe 5-4.
Yeah.
So like it's a very very it's a split as you're going to get on this segment. So clearly we don't know which way to go with it.
No, there's a lot of stock being put on what Moyes has done recently with Everton. So it's 8 goals in their last 3 Premier League games. That's as many as their previous 14 Premier League games combined. When you look at the analysis that's been done of it, it's just very simple. David Moyes has been getting more attackers into the box and attacking with just a bit more volume. But that also kind of goes for Bournemouth a little bit. There's sometimes been a bit of chaos around their attack. And I wonder if actually when we go for the over X amount of goals this weekend, could Everton versus Bournemouth actually be the one that throws this up? Because at the end of the day, what I was going to say there is, at the end of the day, this is not a game that's going to define their season. But I wonder if that's actually only true for Everton. Is this not the perfect type of fixture that Bournemouth should be targeting and be like, listen, we may not get top 5 in the Premier League this season. We're having an amazing year. We should absolutely be targeting trying to get all the way to Wembley here. And they are a better team than Everton. Like, pound for pound, they should be able to win this game this weekend. Should they not be throwing all their eggs in this basket and going for something that's going to give their fans memories to last a lifetime?
I know I should be agreeing with you because I've predicted Bournemouth to win this game, but I almost feel like, especially at home, Everton, and because Everton have such an FA Cup pedigree, I know it's been, 30 years since they last won a top-tier trophy, but this is a team that, in recent memory, has won the FA Cup. And I say recent memory, start of the 90s, wasn't it, when Everton won the FA Cup? But they've lost a couple of cup semi-finals since. I remember they lost to Manchester United one of the years. So they get close. They like a cup run, Everton. And when it's Goodison Park, you'd certainly fancy them. But the only reason I opted for Bournemouth is, I guess, things could go wrong very early doors in this game for Everton. And as we know, it'll be in the back of their minds, as we said, a 2-0 lead on 87 minutes. Anything can happen against Bournemouth.
Is it not more important for Everton to go on a run in the cup than Bournemouth? Because Bournemouth's season is going to be viewed as successful, most likely, unless they dive off a cliff in the next couple of months. Whereas for Everton, it's been a pretty dire season. Now, hopefully they should avoid relegation. They're like, what, 9 points ahead of Leicester at the moment. So that should be enough, provided that they don't get another points deduction or something. But, you know, if Moyes comes in, does a run in the cup, gets Everton scoring goals again, I feel like that's going to be seen as a bigger achievement for him than, like, Bournemouth have almost already achieved what is good for their season. Yes, they can add to it, but Everton could actually totally change the outlook of the season.
Yeah, you're right. And I also think that after those last three games, I'd be very surprised if Everton got relegated. And I think that their form dictates that, not that they take the foot off the pedal in the Premier League whatsoever, but I think you're right that they're, like, for Everton, going and actually focusing on this might actually be something that that would be worthwhile. Also, on the Bournemouth point, like, I'll have my reservations about even Forest getting into the top five at this point and kind of seeing how the season develops on that front. But I think maybe we need to remind ourselves that getting into Europe for Forest and for Bournemouth, not the Champions League, would be a massive step forward. So it's not like they can take the foot off the gas with regards to their domestic competition, with regards to their league competition, I should say, because they need to be constantly battling for sixth and seventh, whatever the Europa League spots or Conference League spots might actually be. So that is a fair point. That is a fair point. And maybe it flips it on its head entirely. Or you could just have two teams very motivated for this.
And look, whoever wins this game, it all of a sudden is into, what, the last 16 of the FA Cup. You could get a reasonable draw in the fifth round. There are still games there where you could get a decent draw at home, especially. And then all of a sudden you find yourself in an FA Cup quarterfinal, and the rest, anything can happen from that point on. So this, I think teams maybe in the Premier League especially take the FA Cup with a bit of a pinch of salt in the third and fourth round. But as soon as you get beyond this round into the fifth round, then anything can happen.
You kind of see what way you're said. It's like we're having that chat around the Carabao Cup this week. Like Arsenal, for example, would have been way better putting out the kids in their first match, losing that game, rather than getting beaten in this sort of thin air situation in St. James's Park, where you're full 11, the sort of shame of losing that semi-final and like being referred to as like flaky all week long and off the ball breakfast. Not pointing fingers at any show here.
Well, I was only on this morning, of course. So
Of course, not all week long.
This is like the former breakfast crew sort of like therapy session.
But like you're better off, but you're basically, that's your point. You know, you can be a bit more lackadaisical about these fixtures early in the competition, and then you find yourself in the quarterfinals, and it's like, okay, trophy is a possibility here. Let's start to take this thing seriously. And the question is, which of the big teams is going to be alive in the quarterfinals? That's when they'll, you know, that meme of the guy playing a video game where he like crouches forward. That's when all the big teams start crouching forward, is when they get to the quarterfinals.
Well, it's Portsmouth 08 and it's Wigan. Was it Wigan 2010?
Yeah.
Like, no one can convince me that at the start of the season they sat down before the third round and said, right, lads, we're going to give this a real tilt. We're going to try and win the FA Cup. It just gathers momentum as the rounds go. You start to progress. Once you get, as I said, to the fifth round, the quarterfinals, then you start to believe. So, yeah, I don't think either Everton or Bournemouth will be massively thinking about the FA Cup. But if you get to full-time at Goodison Park tomorrow afternoon and you've won, then you'll start to believe, I think.
They couldn't have slandered the Arsenal women's team on off the ball breakfast this week anyway. They had that win over Manchester City last Sunday as well. But then in the cup, they go out, get beaten by Manchester City again. Shane, you were talking about the playing teams in the league and then in the cup back-to-back. That's what happened to Arsenal this week. And we had a mixed outcome. I don't think there's going to be any mixed outcomes that we're predicting for this weekend against the London City Lionesses. The only question is to what magnitude. So Mick is going for the big one here, 6-0. Kathleen going 5-1. Shane, you're going 5-1. I was actually going to go 5-1 as well. But
that would have been curious, wouldn't
it? Nathan, 5-1 as well.
Yeah,
anybody going for a really small result there? Oh, Will and Jared both going for 2-0 Arsenal. That's probably too mild an expectation, is it?
You would hope so, anyways. I mean, it's been a really interesting time for London City Lionesses over the last 6 months to a year. You know, you had Michelle Kang, who's this massive investor in women's football, coming in, bringing these big names, putting a lot of money behind them, updating their training facilities, updating the pitch they play in. Like, she owns Lyon. That's the caliber of teams that you're talking about that she works with. But then over the last couple of weeks, there's just been a lot of weird departures from the club. We had our own Ruche Littlejohn and Grace Maloney both having their contracts terminated midway through the, well, mutually agreeing to go their separate ways midway through the season. But Rusha was chatting on her show this week and it doesn't sound like there was anything too mutual about it.
No.
And she was quite frustrated as well about the way she was treated. We all know Rusha and her Achilles is an ongoing issue that needs to be managed, but she kind of felt like the club weren't managing it very well, that they were basically telling her what she needed and she felt like she knew what her body needed more so. So it's kind of been, and there's been a couple of other players that have left as well in weird circumstances. So I don't know what the attitude around the club is at the moment. London City are one of those teams that would be pushing to get up into the WSL, but I think after the result against City last night, Arsenal will want to go out, put in a big performance. Like, you look at the City game in the league at the weekend was a bit of a mess. There was just no defending. It was goals galore, 7 goals, 4-3 to Arsenal. It was basically a case of when it gets to 90 minutes, who is going to be the lucky one that's a goal ahead? You know, you couldn't have really said that one team was necessarily remarkably better than the other. And then last night we saw a much more cautious approach from both sides, and it took basically a bit of brilliance from Mary Fowler in the 95th minute to edge City across the line against Arsenal. I think what you'll see at the weekend is Arsenal going out to prove that they can score goals, that they aren't a flaky team, which is something that has also been put at the women's team at times with their kind of up-down nature, which has changed. It's gotten a little bit more steady since Renee Sleggers has come in there as the permanent manager. But I just think this Arsenal side should have too much power for London City at the moment.
Yeah, and I think I threw in the consolation goal because you're always afraid of going for games to nil. It feels like it's, you know, they're bound to score a goal in the 90 minutes. And there's a bit of the Burnley argument from Lee earlier about London City Lionesses, you know, a team that is going reasonably well in the Championship. You know, 8 wins from 12 games. And yet, they've become, for me and a lot of Irish fans, the villain ahead of this weekend. Like those quotes from Rusha Littlejohn particularly.
Fairly damning.
Like she's saying that they lacked class, and where she's talking about that they didn't let me, or they didn't like me maybe doing outside stuff, media or whatever it might be, podcasts, etc. And then you're seeing some of the messages coming in from our international teammates as well, publicly on social media saying, oh, I hope you basically,
you
deserve better and I hope you're treated with respect wherever you go next and that sort of thing. So there's clearly a lot of ill feeling between Rusha and London City Lionesses, and I don't know, it doesn't look good for the club. Obviously we'll hear the club's perspective as well, and they did release a statement when Rusha left and wished her well, as you kind of have to do, but they've become a little bit of a villain heading into this FA Cup weekend as well.
Is that a bit of a shame? I know we're looking at it very much through Irish tinted spectacles and maybe that'll wear off over time, but is it not important for a club like London City Lionesses to be kind of like a strong force in the game, given like that their highest ranked team in English football not linked to like a Premier League team?
Oh yeah, completely. And as I said, with Michelle Kang coming in there, you know, she's notorious for going into teams and clubs where there is a bad history. So she first started with the Spirit over in the NWSL whenever there was that big controversy going on about various different clubs, about managers and inappropriate conduct and all of that sort of stuff. And she was seen as the rescuer who came in and, you know, turned around the culture, brought more women into the background of running things, you know, was putting players to the forefront. Same thing happened whenever she bought Leon. Michelle Aulis, who was there, just had some, it was a very different situation to what had happened in the States in terms of there was no like allegations of abuse or anything, but just maybe had some interesting opinions about things at times and didn't get on with some of the players after a while. So she came in, she bought, and again was seen like a savior. So it's been interesting that since she's come into London City, she hasn't necessarily been able to have the same impact, it seems, with the players. Now, there may be more deep-rooted problems there that need to be sorted over a while. You know, even their last coach left in very strange circumstances, and it was announced like an hour before the game that she was no longer going to be there. And apparently there was like stuff out of the club that she had left because a game had been postponed because of a waterlogged pitch, and she was like, this is unacceptable, the conditions aren't right. But again, I'm like, you don't leave an hour before a game, or it's not announced an hour before a game just because it's a waterlogged pitch. You know, there has to be deeper rooted issues there. So it is a massive shame, because they could be a powerhouse that comes into the WSL, does something like Kang isn't afraid to throw money at these clubs, and she's seen a lot of success with that. So it's going to be one to watch, I think, over the next couple of months, because I think they're only a point off Birmingham at the top of the table. So there's a very high possibility that they do
get
promoted.
With the game last played as well, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a very high possibility that they do get promoted. So,
on that situation as well, just to, when you're reading Roosh's comments, and like, so if a player, especially at a championship club, say, for example, plays for their international team in the Republic of Ireland and then goes back to their club, what you expect is a bit of respect, them to say, you know, well done and get on your cap and playing well. But she comes back from an international camp, I think it was after the Wales game. And as you said, she has the Achilles issues, so the club are maybe nervous about that. But there's none of this congratulations on getting your cap and playing really well. It was you didn't manage. Why didn't you manage yourself? Why did you play? You're supposed to manage yourself. And she said, well, I manage myself at the Republic of Ireland. Like, playing for your country is such a massive honour, whether you're a man or woman, underage, senior, it doesn't matter.
It was also a European playoff as well.
Completely, yeah.
You know.
But for the club not to understand the gravity of that match and to understand that you would go through any pain barrier to play for your country, that left a bit of a strange taste when I saw those comments from Roosh.
Yeah, and like, Roosh is famously good at managing herself in that, you know, she never trains the day before a game. I remember being over in Cardiff for the game and the Welsh journalists coming up to us after we saw like 15 minutes of training and being like, oh, Roosh is clearly not playing tomorrow because she didn't train and she just sat on the sidelines, you know, in her trainers doing her little bits or whatever. And we were like, oh, no, that's classic Roosh. She doesn't train the day before a game because she knows that's how she manages her injury. You know, she has been relatively smart to get herself to this stage, 34, still playing, admittedly suffering sometimes, but you know, I think, yeah, if she feels like that they were saying to her, you don't understand your body or you're not managing yourself right, then there is something there.
Right, very interesting. So Arsenal versus London City, Linus's sounds like a story worth a deeper dive on and one to follow, but none of us expect them to really lay a glove on Arsenal this weekend in the FA Cup. That pretty much rounds off who you got for this week. Kathleen, thank you very much. Enjoy the weekend's football. Shane, thank you. Enjoy Manchester United tonight. We'll be back in just a few minutes.
Football on Off the Ball.
With William Hill. You can boost your winnings on every game with new Bet Builder Extra. Only with William Hill. Download the app today. 18+ gamblingcare.ie.
This is News Talk.